Have you ever absolutely panicked after you accidentally deleted a file on your computer? I know I have. It's not an issue if you've got CrashPlan Smart Recovery. Your files are just a few clicks away and can be restored in a snap. CrashPlan provides the best cloud backup solutions in the market. Visit crashplan.com/bossproject for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. Now you can protect all your work with an unlimited backup and recovery solution. CrashPlan makes it simple to restore some or all of your data. And with unlimited version retention, CrashPlan can be your ultimate rewind button. Get unlimited computer backup for you or your business with CrashPlan Professional. CrashPlan backs up files that live on your computer and works with PC, Mac, and Linux. Don't let data disasters slow you down. CrashPlan has your back and keeps you moving. Go to crashplan.com/bossproject for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/bossproject for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. Today on the podcast, we have Ankur, the founder of Teachable. Ankur is a super rad guy. He's open, transparent, and honest about his company and his growth. And for those of you who don't know, Teachable has a big place in our heart. Mm-hmm. It's where we host the Strategy Academy, and we have all of our courses built just for you.
But for you guys who aren't necessarily interested in building courses, this episode is still going to be for you because we're actually taking it back before even Teachable was around. We hear from Ankur share his biggest mistake in naming his business, tips on hiring and mistakes they made in that entire process, and just what the heck to do with rapid growth and how to take advantage of your traction. So even if you're not into courses, this one is still going to help you out and give you some action steps that you can definitely take away today. We're super excited for you to give this one a listen. So guys, we are super excited. We are here with Ankur from Teachable, which you all know we are addicted to and we love. But we kind of wanted to bring it back a second today and talk more about how Teachable even came to be as we know it today. So welcome. Thanks for being here.
Awesome. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, we know, I don't think everyone else does, but I think people would be very surprised to know that the Teachable as we know it today didn't always exist and is actually relatively pretty young. So I would love for you to walk us through what the heck came before Teachable and a little bit of the process of who that program was for, and then we'll kind of get into the meat and potatoes of that change.
Cool. Yeah. So, well, this business used to not be called Teachable at the time, but the overall business is about 2.5 years old. And we started off incorporated as Use Fedora Incorporated, which we can get into and, you know, it's a pretty terrible name. So that business started and we first started, you know, kind of having course. Well, first it was an unnamed product in the fall of 2013. We incorporated in summer 2014 as Use Fedora Incorporated. And it was only in October 2015. We realized we hated the name for a long time. It was only in October 2015 that we actually rebranded to what is now Teachable. So that's awesome. Kind of the brief timeline. So we've only been Teachable now for about 14 months or so.
That's still bananas to me.
Yeah. What specifically, I mean, as a marketer, like I get why Use Fedora is not a great name choice, but what made you guys go, we shouldn't have done that?
So it was actually really, really easy because normally with some things, you know, you like it, there's benefit, there's pros and cons, but this was pretty much no pros. So things we didn't like about it were one, my entire attitude towards naming up front was I don't see the point of spending time trying to come up with a name for a business that may or may not exist 3 months, 6 months, 12 months from now. There's a lot of people that get into like, you know, decision-making paralysis where you're, I can't find the right name. And I hated that. I was like, this is stupid. This company's probably not going to exist in a few months. So it doesn't make sense to spend time focusing on a name. So we came up with Fedora, as good as any. Usefedora.com was the only domain available. So I ended up buying the domain and was like, okay, you know, let's just keep going with this. But then as we, you know, became a real company, everything became less existential. Like it was no longer a will we exist any longer or not. Like we knew we'd exist. And that's when a lot of things started to bother us. One, I really, really got annoyed of people asking me why I called it Fedora because I had no good answer. That started happening a lot.
It's like when people ask you, why'd you get that tattoo? Don't ask me these things.
Yep. But then also from a business perspective, we were not ranking number one on Google for Fedora. And chances are we probably never were because there was a Linux operating system called the Fedora Project or whatever. And they'd been around since, you know, since the internet existed, like early 90s. Mm. So we were never going to win that SEO battle. After a long time, we finally got to like page one of Google. We were still so far down.
Wow.
It was actually hurting our business. And the third reason, and this one just kind of like sealed the whole deal, is they kept threatening to sue us unless we changed our name.
Oh, jeez.
So
that's kind of a deal breaker.
There's no reason to be called Fedora anymore. We don't like it. We have legal pressure to change it. It was a no-brainer of a decision to actually go ahead and do it.
How did you come up with Teachable? Because when I heard it the first time, I was like, A, this is brilliant. B, how did they get that domain? Like, what the heck? How was that even possible?
Yep, I'll start by telling you what we did wrong in the process. And like, sure. This is probably amongst the most idiotic things I've ever done as a founder. We had, I'm trying to think, how many people were in the company at the time? We were maybe like 15 people in the company. Okay. And I decided to solicit everyone for a name. And in fact, the single specific stupidest thing I ever did was have a meeting with every single person in the company, which we, as a rule, almost never do because you're wasting so much company time if you have single person there.
Yes. It's so expensive too.
And of course everyone has ideas on names, and of course you're never going to find 15 people to agree on a name. And very soon we kind of scratched that. Like, we had one meeting, it was a complete disaster. I think the best name that came out of that meeting, I'm trying to think, was Zeech. Teach with a
Zeech.
It was awful. And it was compounded by the fact that it was a Friday meeting, but then Friday we went out drinks and we just kept sort of Zeech enough that we actually liked it. Again, you know, like, it's going to go on a very different path.
That was a beer infused
definitely. You know, it just sounded better after a few drinks, so we just kept saying Zeech. But thankfully, there were some people that just thought it was the most abysmal name ever. That didn't end up happening. Then the way the process worked is what we did is we started to look at premium domain names. Like, how can we spend money for a domain name? Because that, in general, means it's kind of quality. And bear in mind, we're a venture-backed company. It's not a big deal for us to spend, you know, 20 grand, 30 grand on a domain name, like for something that was going to define our entire company. So we started looking at what are expensive domain names that have the word teach in them. Because, you know, I mean, there's one angle, and we still looked at a couple of names that were more of a, I don't know, like a random startup word that doesn't mean anything, but you have the opportunity to be that word.
Right.
And then we came up with a bunch of much better domains, trying to think of what they were. Teachable was obviously the one I and a lot of people liked the most, but there was also teachit.com, goteach.com, and a lot of different versions of something that had the word teach. Just because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of marketplaces, but our focus is always teacher first. Like, we're more about the teacher experience than, you know, a platform for students to find courses. In retrospect, Teachable now seems like easily the best name, but even then, I remember there were people in the company unhappy about it. There were people in the company that did not like the connotation of Teachable and Teachable Moment, saying all the press around it is like negative, like Teachable Moment, you know, I don't want that to be in the company. There's people that wanted us to be called teachit.com, so people want us to be called goteach.com. But at some point, I think there's enough momentum behind Teachable, and I personally was just so sick and tired of all these conversations, didn't feel productive, that we're like, you know what, we're going to be Teachable. And yeah, we spent, I want to say, somewhere in the early 20s of thousands to buy the domain.
To get it. Yep. That's incredible.
Yep.
I'm so glad you changed it. Like, I mean, obviously it needed to happen, but I think that was probably one of the best branding decisions you could have made.
Because
I think you went from, you know, nobody's heard of you to like immediately you had this brand recognition that was memorable and easy to understand and shareable. Like, I think it went from like, we looked for solutions in, I guess, late 2015, and it was just really hard to find things. And then within a couple of months, it was like you were everywhere. And we're like, when did that happen?
Yep, we also had our summit, I think last November, which also like helped us on the map. You know how when you normally announce anything, and we see this, whenever we announce anything, no matter how good it is, there's a percentage of people that reply back being like, this is stupid. I hate it. I hate change. We only got one negative email about our rebrand, which is absurd.
Like, we
can say anything. We can like send people like, you know, puppies, and five people be like I hate them. Yeah. But we only had one negative email. Everyone was like, oh God, this is the best rebrand.
This is the best. Yes.
I think one of our employees put it best when he said, like, this sounds like a grown-up company name. Like, this sounds like, you know, like something that like a grown-up business rather than a side project. So
I love it. I love it. So talk to us about when Use Fedora first came out and you had your ideas wrapped around that. Was what Teachable is now, even in the scope of how you think Use Fedora could have shifted to, was it the type of audience that you were even going after, or did that change as well in the rebrand?
The type of audience changed organically. Like, they just had, you know, like the actual product and the product vision did not change that much at all, which is kind of absurd. Like, even then, it's like, okay, a white label website to build your course. Our initial target market was more Udemy teachers and people on marketplaces. And then it slowly started shifting towards, as we realized how big, you know, the WordPress world is of people who are using terrible, terrible WordPress plugins. And, you know, and then other segments, like we now have a lot of authors and, you know, speakers and people that would be like selling information in some form factor or the other, but not necessarily an online course. So we didn't predict that, but I don't think the branding specifically had anything to do with it as much as, you know, that's just where the market went. And that's where people started using our product.
Awesome. What do you think was the momentum behind it? Do you think it was getting that summit together initially to get the word out? Or how do you think you got the momentum around building this growth?
I think it's a combination of factors. I mean, as it always is, but it's like everything kind of has worked in the perfect way. Like, whenever we segment where do most of our customers come from, it's still word of mouth. We can do all the summits in the world. We can have all the affiliates and all the JVs and all the webinars, but it's really the word of mouth that ultimately drives most of our growth. But outside of that, I think we have a very, very, very good marketing and growth team, good at partnerships, good affiliates, good content program, doing a lot of things right. And ultimately, I mean, clearly people use the product and we're capitalizing on the growth of also the industry as a whole. Is that a cop-out of an answer? Or is that like, because I basically said everything.
Well, I think that was a very founder answer, but I'll let it slide.
So, I mean, more specifically, I guess when I look at the trajectory of how we grew, what changed? Like, if you're looking at the inflection points, right? At what point did the slope of the graph or whatever change? The first one was when we rebuilt our product, because our first product was built by me and I'm a shitty engineer. So that was like the first kind of inflection point. The second inflection point happened when we started doing webinars to our own audience one time a week and then twice a week, like every Tuesday and Thursday. So anytime anyone, we had a new segment of people, we'd do weekly webinars and try and, you know, convert them. So that helped. That didn't help us acquire more free customers, but it helped us convert our free to paying customers in a pretty meaningful way.
Okay.
The summit was not an inflection point in the sense that it changed how fast we grew. It just provided a bunch of growth at one time, but we still kept growing at the same rate.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate the very specific feedback, because that was way more what I was after. So talk to us more about the growth of your team, because as you rapidly build users, obviously you need to rapidly build support. So how are you able to strategically hire people into positions to handle the growth of your company?
I mean, we're still winging it. We're still discovering, we're still learning and figuring this stuff out as we go. Most people here are doing this for the first time. So we're 30 people right now. We'll probably be 40 by the end of next quarter and kind of steadily add a couple people a month moving on. That's been far and away both the biggest challenge, but also the most meaningful thing to grow a business at this size. You know, like doing like three more partnerships or deals or whatever isn't going to grow the business over the long term the way hiring a new head of content might.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So that's been the entire shift. That's the part we're struggling with a little bit right now too. Not the hiring, but the systems and processes. Like, I'm not very good at it. Like, my, you know, I'm not a very system process kind of person, but that's becoming more and more important as we grow. What I've found is running a company at 10 people, 15 people, 20, 25 at every stage is running a different beast altogether. Mm-hmm. So that's been the biggest learning factor. I think we've been very fortunate. We've got a lot of very, very good people, and it's been a learning process as to how we've actually gotten them. And it's also changes by role. Like, hiring a very good engineer is very different from hiring a very good growth person.
Right.
Yes.
And sometimes you have to be, you know, we have to be unconventional in terms of how we hire.
Well, and I love that you stayed out, and I want to make sure people hear this, is that it makes way more sense for your growth to invest in head of content and make sure that that's a running, well-oiled machine than to do one good partnership. And I think people look for those quick fixes and those quick, really high influx of sales or whatever, instead of looking at that long-term growth strategy. So hear it from Teachable, guys.
Yep. That's become like, hiring is, even now as a founder, I should be spending about half my time on hiring. I realistically spend 25%. Every time I spend more, I'm like, wow, this is so much more impactful. Like, it's so much, it's the highest leverage thing I can do with my time right now.
That's really scary to hear.
Yeah.
For me.
No. And our team's grown rapidly too. I mean, we're still only at about 5, but it's like, it's still hard. It's still crazy. It's still nerve-wracking to give up a piece of your company and let someone else run it. So I understand that. So I'd be curious if that's like what you think it should be, half of your time. How are you spending your time as you've grown your team out? Are you still creating content? What do you find your role is?
So for, I mean, so when we were a team of one, I did everything from building the product to customer support to sales to everything. Mm-hmm. And then the first thing I started, I obviously didn't do was writing any code. And then for a long period of time, till about this summer, my primary job was being the head of growth and marketing, along with helping out a little bit with product vision. Then at some point over the course of this summer, I decided, you know, I was pretty happy with how our growth and marketing team was going, how it was growing. And again, I started feeling like the only way to truly drive leverage is to actually make our core product better. So I then kind of switched back to product right now. Sorry, not right now, this summer. And where I am right now is I'm trying strategically to make every single thing I do obsolete. Just because there's always so much to do, I'm trying to own absolutely no role whatsoever. It never works out that way. Realistic, you know what that means? I'm doing some hiring. I'm just plugging in holes wherever there are holes. Mm-hmm. So like right now we have no operational lead. So I'm helping out with a bunch of operation stuff, even though I dislike it and I'm very bad at it.
Hire an operation. I know enough about you to know you need a systems person in there.
Yep. We are. Like, you know, at this point, we're hiring right now for about 9 or 10 roles simultaneously.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's awesome. How do you go about hiring people? I mean, I'm sure at the beginning it was a lot different than it is now. Here and now, I'm guessing you put out more like official HR releases, but
It depends on one, every single role is different. Like hiring engineers is nothing like hiring anyone else, especially in a competitive market like New York. Because remember, we are an in-person team. Every single person here, with the exception of one, is in the office. We want to continue growing that way. So hiring for engineers is very different because then we're competing in a very, very crowded like New York landscape. Best engineers know they're good. And you fight really, really hard to find a good engineer. Like, it's literally us battling with other companies. We're taking them out to dinner. We're trying to, like, as to why they should.
That stresses me out.
It's like, you know, like the major league, you know, like NFL or baseball, like you're recruiting them almost.
Yep. And it depends. I mean, sometimes that happens even with, I mean, you guys know Jess, right? Did she tell you how we hired her?
No. She said she was from London, though.
She's from London. We flew her out here to spend time with us for 2 weeks and work with us. And, you know, we just made her like us as people. Because, like, sometimes when you're hiring people, that's one of the things we have to use to our advantage in hiring, like, is we have an in-person team. So if we can sell people on the other people you're around, because I think that's the biggest benefit we can offer to anyone. Like, yes, you know, like you'll do meaningful work. Yes, you'll work on a good product, great customers. But the single biggest thing we can offer people who work here is like the quality of your life will be greater and you will have a lot more fun being here. So with Jess, that was our playbook. Our playbook was like, let's just get Jess to spend a few weeks here. She's not going to want to leave. And it worked.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
I want to come.
When you said you had a holiday party recently, I was like, oh, I want to fly to New York just to go to that. But
that was one of two. We now have a second one coming up next week.
So
that
have a customer holiday party stat.
Yeah. No, we did. We did. The last one was for our customers. The next one is just.
I didn't get an invite. Thanks.
Yes, you did. You just didn't even pay it. And I read the
You're
email.
You're right. I don't open any emails these days.
That's totally fair.
So I'm curious, what made you decide? I mean, obviously you're building this company that's all about helping, I feel like, mostly online entrepreneurs. So what made you choose growing an in-person team over having remote employees?
So the truth is, when it first started, it was incidental. Like, we could have gone either way. Found our first engineer, Noah, who might be somewhere sitting behind me, but who's now our CTO and stuff. And he was in New York and we started working together. And then we had a third person, a fourth person. It was, again, not even that strategic a decision. I am so, 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 so happy it worked out that way. Mm. I would not trade it for the world. And here's where I think it's different. I think if, you know, we were a remote company, and again, who knows, because it's hard to imagine how things would have gone. If we were a remote company and someone came to me saying, look, here's $100 million for your company, we want to buy it, I'd likely sell it in a second. Right now, I don't want to because the quality of my life is so much greater because of the people I spend time with. And that's
that gives me chills.
Yeah, that's something I wouldn't really trade for the world. Again, I mean, you know, caveating with there might be, I also think it's because we're at the perfect size. There might be a time when there were 150 people and I'm like, my life sucks. Like, this is actually not that fun.
Right now,
right now we're also like, I think at the perfect size. Like, you know, 30 people is like small enough where everyone knows everyone and you're still like, you know, growing fast. It's like everything feels right at this specific moment.
I love that. Well, talk to us a little bit about office morale and like how to be better boss and how to lead and make those decisions while also like, I think there's always that balance of like friends, but boss role. And so how do you find that?
One, I mean, anything I say here makes me feel like an asshole, right? Because I know people can't listen. I don't think I found that role. I don't think I found
it's
that.
It's hard.
Like, I don't think, like, I think as a company, we're probably too far along the spectrum of friends. And I say too far just because people say that's bad, and I'm sure that is bad. And there obviously, you know, have been times where, you know, we've had to let people go and so forth.
Right.
But yeah, so I don't know if I've really discovered that balance personally. I think what helps is everyone we have is super smart. And I think one of the hallmarks of being intelligent is being self-aware. And I think that helps. Like, I think we have like mature, we have a very, very young, very mature team. Like, I'm 27 and I'm above the median age at this company by like a year.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow. So, that's incredible.
That's so crazy. I didn't know you were 27. I couldn't tell at all. I mean, we're the same age. That blows my mind. I'm getting a little jealous right now. I was like, oh, I got like 3 years to be as awesome as him. So
No, I'm 27. But I mean, we also have a lot of people here for whom it's their first job or second job. And a lot of times it's not even because like they're just out of college, but a lot of people that have ran their own business have been independent entrepreneurs that have then joined the company. I mean, there's a lot of people here, again, looking 10 years in the future that would end up starting their own business as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very kind of entrepreneurial group we have here and couldn't be happier with the people here.
Well, you're just like the cutest little founder ever. I just want to hug you through the screen right now. Oh, that's so great. I mean, obviously building a team that you love that much and that really helps you personally is awesome. And I totally get the being mature and young. Emily and I both took BuzzFeed tests last night and we both tested as 70-year-old women. So I think there's something to be said for being an old person.
BuzzFeed tests are pretty much science.
Yes,
they're like spot on.
We can put a link in the show notes to the being an old person test.
I feel very bad whenever I see any of that because that's what I spent my past life between 19 and 21 doing, creating shitty personality tests.
That sounds amazing. I would take all of them. So
if I can have someone guess where I live and how old I am based off my Starbucks drink order, I'm going to take that test.
You would be amazed by how much randomness is in the answers.
I believe it. I'm sure. Well, when we tested exactly the same, I was like, as everybody who takes this test to get 70, if you get 70, let us know.
The trick is the description of the result, right? If you can find things that everyone goes, is like, oh, that's so me. That's all that matters.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Everyone thinks they're a passionate person. Like, who thinks I'm like not a passionate? Like, you know, like it's there's enough things you can write in those descriptions to make people self-identify.
Well, obviously, you're using, I feel like, some of that language to make teachable, you know, work. What were you doing? I mean, I don't usually like to dive into past stuff, but I'm really curious what kind of led you to want to build this type of product.
There's like the answer that entrepreneurs come up with about seeing like their passion, whatever. The reality of the situation is this was a side project. I was at a point in my life where I had not done anything productive. Well, not done anything productive. I tried a lot of businesses and not really worked. Started this as a side project. It got momentum. Things kept progressing. We raised money. And then came the vision. Like, that's the reality, right? A lot of people say they started with a vision, this like burning desire. No, this is a side project. It started doing well. Then the vision formulated. And then we started to realize who we are, what we wanted to be, and what we're going to do. So when we first started the company, it was a side project. I was teaching courses on Udemy, wanted something for me and the guy I was teaching courses with to sell on our own website, built it for ourselves, then got more customers. Like, that's the reality of how the founding story actually worked.
That's the truth and meat for everyone. Like, cut past that crap of like, I'm just doing what I love. Like, you should do what you love. And that's the end result of doing the things and going after your passion. But you're doing it for a very strategic reason. So I love that. I think people stress out over that too, about, well, what is my vision? And what is my why? And what is this?
The other thing I find it to be such bullshit is when people say like, hey, the only way you're going to build a company is like, if you really care passionately about the problem, that's what's going to keep you going for like many years. That's untrue. through. What keeps you going early on is traction. If you build a business and you're not acquiring traction, but you have this vision and you keep trying, I think you should be trying something else.
Yeah.
I think you should look for early indicators of traction and double down on that.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of what happened.
Oh my gosh. 100%. I so agree. So, because when we started selling courses, you know, it was a test. It was not like a, oh, 100%. I think we're going to quit everything else we're doing to do this forever. It was like, let's see if people like us teaching because we think we might like that. And then it worked and we saw traction and we kept growing and our business started growing and we made more money and more people started showing up. And literally, if those things hadn't happened, I'm sure we would have stopped teaching right away. We probably would have never even switched to Teachable because we didn't have a problem, you know?
Yep. So, and that's the reality that like, yeah, it just annoys me.
Yes.
It annoys, I appreciate the truth factor.
Want to learn exactly step-by-step how to get paid to generate leads in your business? I've kept these details to myself for far too long. I'm ready to spill everything and give you the exact steps that helped me generate tens of thousands of qualified leads and millions in low-ticket digital product sales. I won't just show you what I did, but teach you how you can do it too. I'm talking not just how to create low-ticket digital products, but also showing you how to use them strategically to generate leads for your other existing or future offers. I'm sharing it all at bossproject.com/jumpstart, including exactly how I made $8,033 and generated 277 leads my very first month selling digital products. Find out more at bossproject.com/jumpstart. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I love that Indeed makes it easy to hire because I'm busy enough already. When we've hired in the past, the process was full of unqualified applicants. With Indeed, we can target the right candidates for the right position. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/strategy hour. Just go to Indeed.com/strategy hour right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/strategy hour. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Money issues are a common stressor in any relationship. Monarch Money is the top-rated personal finance app that can get you and your partner on the same page without any extra cost. Monarch has built-in collaboration features, so together you can see your finances, budget, and get insights on your cash flow. It's the easiest way to manage any household finances. I've tried other finance apps in the past, and they didn't work the way I wanted them to. I don't want to stress over finances. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/strategy. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to get set up, customize, and use. Monarch prioritizes my privacy, and they'll never sell my data to third parties. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/strategy. That's monarchmoney.com/strategy for your extended 30-day free trial.
So if you're dropping truth bombs, what other things do we need to know about Teachable that other people can learn from? Or what are some mistakes you've made?
Mistakes. I mean, let's see. Product mistakes I've made are building too much stuff early on without considering if to support it forever.
Yes.
Like, I remember when it was a one-person company, I thought it'd be a great idea to let people have affiliates that we'd pay out. And I'm totally glad we did that. And at this point, it makes sense. But there was a time for 2 years we realized we had to collect collect tax information for anyone's random affiliate. Like, it was just a lot of, like, never thinking about the back end of what, like, supporting a feature is going to be like. Just like, oh, how cool would it be if X? So just realizing that every time you build anything, at least for us as a software company, you kind of have to support it forever. So that was a pretty, pretty big mistake. The other big mistake we make, and again, this is, I apologize, this is such a generic answer. Everyone says this, but we do too much at once. Like, it's really, really hard to, like, not, like, we do a lot of projects, and that's probably what my team hates me for the most, specifically the engineering team is like, can we just spend a month, 2 months just working on existing stuff? So we were getting better at that, but you're
No, you can't.
No, you can't. Do this also.
What else? Other mistakes? I don't know. I mean, overall, like, I think we've been incredibly fortunate so far. Like, the other mistakes have not been... I wouldn't say they haven't been mistakes. Like, obviously, we've made hiring mistakes. We've made, you know, very often with hiring. And I think we're getting better. But very often, if there's some problem you feel to be, like, you know, like a really, really big problem, like with operations right now, I feel it. And whenever I'm interviewing candidates, I feel like our hiring bar is not high enough because you can visualize this person coming in and solving all your problems. And sometimes in the past, it's caused us to, like, probably hire too soon because you feel the pain of the problem so much without ever vetting someone deep enough.
Yes.
That's definitely been something we've done in the past, trying to get better at, but I think that's just, like, human nature too. You just, like, look at this one new person.
Yeah.
And it's true for people and features, but, like, just, we've also learned, like, there's never going to be that one person or that one feature that's going to solve all your problems. It never is. It might just help a little bit. It always helps a little bit. It's all doing in small phases, but you're never going to have that one person come in and solve everything.
Well, and I think that speaks to even smaller businesses too, that aren't software companies, that are, you know, doing ginormous things like Teachable, but everyone wants to come straight out of the gate. And if they hate this certain task, they're so ready to outsource it. They're so ready to hire this person. But you're creating these problems before you've even figured out the solution yourself and before you've done the dirty work. And oftentimes, especially smaller businesses, it's a lot harder to hire than it is to just do the work for a second until you figure out those tweaks. So
then again, looking at, you know, smaller businesses that we see on our platform, and by smaller, I mean, like, just by structure, like, they're not invested in back and so forth.
Right.
I'm amazed at how good most of them are at delegating. Like, we were very, very, very bad at it. It took me a long time to realize I can just pay people money to do some of the work. It took me forever to realize that. And I see all these people that are so good. It's like, you know, they have one VA doing this task, another VA doing that task, and you've created this, like, business that's scaled so much better than it took us so long, and we still get it bad. Like, I still...
That's so hard to figure out.
Well, and also I want to say a caveat to that. Even if they appear small, you can't necessarily see, like, they may have their shit all together. Like, I think we do a good job of looking all together a good portion of the time. But there's a lot of things going on where I'm like, I have to make another graphic. Why am I still doing design work? Like, so I think, yes, like that, I'm sure you look at other people and you're like, oh, they look so good at delegating. But I think that's like a personal, like, you feeling it, but it's probably because you have shit you need to take care of and, like, that's bothering you. So, no, because I know we don't have it all.
Yeah, everything looks better from the outside.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Everything looks better.
Guys, everyone. Awesome.
So I want to dive in for the next 10 minutes or so. Like, talk to us about the future of Teachable. What are some new features you're really excited about? Where do you see the industry going? I just want to know what's up with Teachable.
This is literally for our own greedy benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just greedy and want to know.
I'll start kind of with the meta, like, bigger picture company stuff, and then can dive a little bit more specifically into the product. Because, as I said, you know, when we started, it was a side project, started working. At some point, we started thinking a little bit more about, like, who we are, like, you know, what's going to define us, what's our vision, and so forth. And we're all kind of centralized in the fact that, you know, the product and vision are related but different. Product is what we are today. The vision is, you know, something that affects every decision we make in the future. I think what we've solidified in our vision is our goal for the rest of this company's existence is to help entrepreneurs or people that will eventually identify as entrepreneurs make a living selling some kind of product of their mind. You know, it's mostly courses now, but basically not selling physical goods, but anything that their brain can really create, give them a platform to actually make a living, you know, selling it. And it ties into a couple of beliefs I have around, you know, where formal education is going, where it's becoming less important. But the second thing is also kind of, the word collapse is too strong now, but the whole idea of everyone having a full-time job and you make all their living in a full-time job, And, you know, that being your one thing, like, that's becoming less important every year. And 5-10 years from now, I think that might just be the exception rather than the reality. With that said, you know, that's kind of the direction we want to take the company in. Our product right now is pretty good, but being very close to it, we're also always its harshest critics. And
right. There's
really two big areas of focus we have on a product side in a longer term way. One of which is just allowing everything to be more customizable and configurable, in the sense where if people can accomplish a certain thing on the product, there's a way for them to do it. So an example is, like, right now we have our power editor. No one really messes with it too much because it's too technical. You're just going to mess things up. But we're soon going to build a layer of themes on top, which means third-party developers can build really custom themes that look incredibly different. Same with, you know, our API. Like, can we open up our API in ways to let other people build on top? And we have an experiment right now where we're releasing an iPhone app that can be used by any of our creators based on our own API. So
that's cool.
That's one big direction. The other direction we're trying to take it in is, how can we leverage the entire network we have and make things better for everyone without compromising our core beliefs? Like, we don't want to cross-sell people's courses without their permission and so forth. So in that, because right now, like, we have about close to 3 million students on the platform. Every single day, 10,000 students sign up for the first time on the platform. We have credit cards for a third of them. Is there a way that, you know, if someone has bought a course on your site and then they go to someone else's site, that they can just buy a course with one click? So we're starting to roll out features to aggregate that while being, like, incredibly, like, careful that we're not going to help people promote their competitors. Mm-hmm. And everything we do is going to be opt-in. But really, how can we, like, take this network and make it better for everyone? Those are the two.
I love that. Yeah.
So right now we're rolling out. That. It's only in a few test places. But if you enable Teachable accounts, if someone has an account on another site, and they come to your site, they can sign up with one click. You still get their email address. Everything else works the same way. It's just a one-click conversion. They sign up. They're into your funnels. And soon payments are going to be that way too, where with one click, they can buy a course. They've bought a course anywhere else in the network. And my guess is that's going to improve conversion rates pretty considerably. And that's a big focus of, like, how can we do this? And all this while, like, they're still taking courses on your site. You're still getting ownership of them. There's no cross-promotion. But it's always a very kind of fine line we're trying to balance.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I started seeing some of those features roll out. I can't remember what it's called, but where they can have that total member account, and that our people already have gotten very excited about that.
And it makes a lot of sense, especially if down the line it'll make things like JVs and promoting other people's audiences so much easier if they can sign up with one click.
Yes.
Like, you know, you invite someone if you're cross-selling something as an affiliate and they can buy it with a couple of clicks versus, like, oh, I have to create a brand new account. I'll have to re-enter my credit card information. My thought is it's going to help the entire network as a whole.
100%. Yeah,
I totally agree. But I mean, personally, if you need ideas for features,
tell me.
I mean, there's a lot of, the stuff I'm talking about here is, like, the bigger picture stuff, there's a lot of, like, smaller improvements and enhancements and stuff where we want to make through the entire, like, I mean, yeah, we could literally hire 20 people on our engineering team and there'd be stuff for them to work on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you don't want to make the same mistake as you did in renaming Teachable and have a giant meeting with all of your students and you just have everyone yelling features at you.
Yep. And that's the other thing is, I mean, as we're realizing the hard ways, I can't remember, what was the quote? You can't make 9 babies in a month or whatever. Like, we can't hire.
I've never heard that.
I'm like bastardizing the quote for sure. So the point is, like, you can't, like, it's sadly not as simple as, like, we're going to hire 10 more people and double our engineering team and move twice as fast. No, best case, we move like 1.5 times as fast.
Right, right. I love that. Well, I personally love the entire just mindset frame shift that you guys are going into, or at least supporting. I don't think it's changed, but the idea that people can create a life doing something that they create in their brain and that they love, and that you are providing an amazing platform for that to happen. That is our jam as well, giving people the tools on how to make that better. So anyone else who supports that, we're down with it.
Interesting to see, you know, kind of what happens next year. Like this year, this year we probably help people make close to $30 million, up from $5 million the year before.
That's amazing.
Yeah, now it feels like this is, like, next year we're hoping to be over $100 million, which at this point I'm like, this is like a real part of the economy. Like, you know, this is like a reasonable slice of transactions, so.
That's awesome.
That's, I mean, yes. The online education space is humongous. And I think there's a giant shift, like you kind of mentioned before, from, you know, deciding to go back to like a traditional, get a master's degree or mm-hmm. something like that, versus can I just take a few classes from a few mm-hmm. people I really respect and learn the skills I need to move forward? Because I think companies, regardless of if you're an entrepreneur or not, I think companies are viewing like alternative training.
Yes.
More like they're giving it more credit than they used to ever before.
Yep. And the coolest part is like so much of the money is flowing back to the people actually teaching, right? There's not these mm-hmm. institutions. It's not other people kind of taking a slice yes. of it. Like yes. money is flowing directly to the teachers. We're starting to see people like on the top end of our spectrum, we have, you know, 4 or 5 people that have made over $1 million teaching.
That's phenomenal.
Like that's super, super cool. Like
no one else is making $1 million teaching. No. Like nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. So never, like a lot of stuff happening now is like, you know, happening for the first time in history that you can yes. now be a teacher, make over $1 million. And I think, I believe that also will lead to better courses. Because if you make $1 million, it means your competitor can also probably make $1 million.
Yeah.
So you'll start spending more of that money to make a better product.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it because I love having these conversations and talking about stuff like this. My brother is 12 years younger than me. So he's about to finish high school and he's going out into this entire world and is still debating college, no college, working. He has his own business now. So it's just so interesting to me to see the up and coming people and where they're spending their energy and learning from.
Super interesting to see where this whole space goes in general.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's two women who both highly considered becoming college professors mm-hmm. because we loved education so much. And I think at least I can speak for myself in saying the only reason I went into the corporate world was because I wanted to make more money because mm-hmm. I knew I was intelligent enough to do so and I could excel in that environment. And then when I realized I could make even more, my potential was even greater doing it on my own. I was like,
yeah,
screw working for someone else. Yeah. Goodbye.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And what I find personally so interesting about online education versus the corporate world too is like how easy it is, relatively speaking, to like double what you're earning, right?
Yes.
Make twice yes. as much from how much you're making from your courses versus to make twice as much from your corporate job is a difference of like 5 to 10 years.
Yes. Oh. You are in charge of how much you're making when you're selling online and when you're doing your own thing. If you want a bonus, do something. Have a launch. Create something else. And there you go.
Yep.
Oh, love it.
And if you want to take a break and not make money that month, that's your jam. So,
exactly.
I mean, well, I would love to move into our next segment called Teach Strategy to Me. So if you can kind of go through, I know we talked a lot about hiring and name choices and marketing and growing a team and all of these things. If you could pick out, you know, 3 to 5 action steps for someone who maybe is more of the beginning stages of growing a business, what should they be doing now to set themselves up for growth?
So the first thing I would talk about is the biggest stumbling block I've seen with people is like different things that form decision paralysis, where whether it's your name, whether it's your fear that, you know, you need to complete X action because you're not ready. Or I mean, the new one I've been hearing on our webinar is, oh, I want to launch a course, but December is not a good month. You know, like
what does that even mean?
Yeah, like December's not a good month. Like it's a holiday. It's not, no, like, you know, like anything that sounds like an excuse is something mm-hmm. that I think is.
We had a 25% conversion on a webinar we had in December of 2016. So December is a fantastic month.
Even if you think December's a slow month, I mean, like it doesn't matter. Like all of these things,
right.
Like a lot of people are focused on hyper micro optimizing. It's too many words. But like, you know, just like making trying to optimize at a scale where, you know, we're a big company and we don't do shit like that. Like, you know,
right.
like it's, you have to be really, it's not important. What's most important up front is one, that you actually, you know, get your business going. Pick a date,
yes.
you launch it, whether it's a course, whether it's another thing, you just launch it. And I guess the second thing I'd talk about, which is related, so I'm just going to segue straight into it, is, I mean, anyone in the world of software is familiar with it. I mean, even otherwise, we do it in different ways, like with pre-selling and stuff, but like, what is your minimum viable product or your minimum viable course, your minimum viable anything that you can put out in the world and start getting feedback? Because again, the reason every project of mine has died is because I got bored, and I got bored because I wasn't getting traction. So if you can do whatever you can to get to traction and to get to like actually having other people engage with it, I'm always very impressed when, you know, people release a video game that took them 3 years to make, because I would not be able to do that. I would get bored. I need to like see
I'm
a
out.
Feedback loop faster. So think about what you can do to start getting some kind of response, ideally positive, sooner rather than later. So if you're, you know, starting, like pre-selling is a great way. Like what can you do to pre-sell? Mm-hmm. With software, what you can do is, what is the smallest version you can build? The first version of Fedora, I'm trying to think, like we used, it was like a Vimeo player with payments and like maybe one other thing. Like it was really, really stupid. It took like 2 or 3 days to build, but then someone bought a course for $50 and it became so exciting. It's like, holy shit, now I'm going to make it better versus, you know, spending a lot of time continuing.
Perfecting it. Mm-hmm. Good is good enough, guys. Get it out.
Yep. Third thing is, and this is at least, again, based on a mistake that I made, is I took way, way, way too long from initial traction to being like, okay, this is something I want to invest in. And I think it's because I was afraid of like, hey, one, like, is this real? Or, you know, is this real traction? And I was also afraid of like, at some level, committing, because I was so burnt out by like all the businesses I thought I was excited about and then got bored and, you know, didn't really do it. And again, the reason I think I was able to commit, and like for a long time, even when we raised our money, the first investor, he back channeled, you know, asked some other people about me. He said, look, I'm willing to invest in you if you answer like one question. He's like, is this like what you want to do? Like, you know, like, are you good? Like, are you not going to bail in a few months or whatever?
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I wasn't sure about it. I said, I think so. You know, I had bravado. I was like, yeah. But as soon as we started building a team, it becomes about more than just you.
Yes. And 100%.
And boredom is not a good enough reason anymore.
Yep.
So once you get past the traction stage, I would say like my takeaway is like try and get other people involved and make it about something more than just yourself.
Love it.
Yay. So many good things. This
almost
was like
half of them are
full of action steps. What?
I said almost half of them are two. And I was like, I'm kidding.
Awesome.
So how can people get in touch with Teachable or you, or where can we find you online?
Mm-hmm.
We are no longer. Just go to usefedora.com. Wait for it to redirect you to teachable.com. We're on Twitter at Teachable, which is a whole other thing of how it took us like another year to go from Teachable HQ on Twitter to Teachable.
Yeah.
And my personal Twitter is my full name, Ankur Nagpal. Probably the best way of getting in touch.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
So much fun. So glad you guys had me.
Looking to elevate your brand without the headache? Join the Co-op, our creative template shop membership. With thousands of easy to customize templates, all crafted to seamlessly fit your business aesthetics. We make nurturing leads and driving sales effortless. We're talking serious impact and seriously simple creation. Become a member now at creativeshopcoop.com and transform your business today. That's creativeshopcoop.com. Hey, a few quick favors before you leave. I'd love if you'd share today's episode. Send it to a friend who needs to hear it and post on social. You can show us where you're listening from, your favorite takeaway, or why someone else should listen. Be sure to tag me at Abigail Says and at Boss Project so we can share it. Okay, second favor, to get podcast updates and all the behind the scenes news from Boss Project, I'd love if you'd join my VIP list. Just head to bossproject.com/signup to make sure I have all your contact details. Really love the show? It would mean so much to me if you'd leave a rating and review. It not only helps more listeners find the show, but allows us to bring on quality sponsors so we can keep bringing you this valuable content for free. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.